This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time 1205. Welcome to the WBBM Noon Business Hour presented by the Village of Bedford Park. I'm Jim Goodis.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We've got lots of sun today, temperatures in the 80s, and a possibility of a thunderstorm later today. It's 82 degrees now at O'Hare.
And a reminder, later this half hour, your chance to win $1,000 in WBBM's Keyword for Cash contest. That coming up at 12:24. But now let's see what's happening on the markets as we go live to Bloomberg and Elisa Peretti.
Jim and Chris, we've been all over the board today. Right now, we're headed slightly lower. The Dow down 94 points, or a third of a percent, but we are back below 26,400. NASDAQ giving back 14, or two-tenths percent, and the S&P now in the red by 8. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index down two-thirds of a percent. Dallas Fed President Rob Kaplan says he sees some inflation building, but he doesn't think there'll be a sudden spike in prices. He says it will be tricky for the Fed if prices do keep rising. A reading on business sentiment from the NFIB stepped lower from an August high, but the level is still historically high. There is a warning on global economic growth, though, from the International Monetary Fund. That might be some of the weakness we're seeing. The IMF is cutting its forecast for this year and next, moving from a rate of 3.9% to 3.7%. Economists say growing tensions between the U.S. and China and trouble in emerging markets could cut growth for the world economy. Back to you, Jim and Chris.
Thanks, Elisa. On today's Noon Business Hour, housing trends, bond yields, the trade war, how to make your credit cards work for you, and airlines are warning about possible disruption of Hurricane Michael.
We'll take a look at what the future might be for the Papa John's pizza chain. And we'll also look at the Google Pixel 3. Is this the smartphone that finally turns it around for Google device sales? All that ahead on the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Discussing the news affecting your money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Shares of Papa John's rise on word that an activist hedge fund is considering a takeover bid. We'll cover that in our next segment. Right now, there's a warning from the International Monetary Fund over the fallout of the trade war involving the U.S. and China. And we're joined by Diane Swonk, the chief economist at Grant Thornton here in Chicago. So, Diane, explain a little bit why the IMF is so concerned.
Well, we're now seeing not only are tariffs escalating, but they're likely to escalate further. And so one of the things that they're concerned about is not only the U.S. and its trade war with China, but China's the second largest economy in the world. It's already slowing more than they say in their data. And in fact, they're trying to offset the impact of the trade war on China by juicing their economy more, and they're already in a lot of debt. So the concern is there's going to be collateral damage from the slowdown in the second largest economy in the world to the rest of the world, most notably developing economies, a lot of emerging markets ship commodities to China, and they're going to be compromised. But also those economies have borrowed a lot from China as well. So it sets up a stage of where you can get much less synchronous growth than we've had. And in fact, I think the IMF is now looking at a picture where it looks like global growth has peaked. So we're no longer growing altogether, which we were last year. The U.S. is doing better. But for the rest of the world, it looks like growth has now peaked in part because of these trade tensions.
Diane, is it too late to reverse the damage, or is this something that is a chronic condition right now?
It's not too late to reverse the damage. There has been damage done in trust and in our trade relationships, but we certainly could turn around and say, we want to deal with China in a more productive way. We want to deal with the intellectual property infractions without damaging a lot of economies all at once. We don't have to escalate further necessarily in January, which is widely expected enough that the $250 billion will move up to 25% tariff on all $250 billion. We might get another $267 billion on Chinese imports on tariffs also in January. That's the concern. And that has ripple effects throughout the world, but we don't have to go there. And we know that the rest of the world is willing to work with us to penalize China and to get them to play by the rules. So we have actual natural allies who've already said they want to work with us to limit China's, you know, and penalize them for their intellectual property infractions and what they've done. But that's not the right now the course we're taking.
Let's, Diane, talk about surging bond yields and what could happen here.
You know, this is really interesting. Is one is China is, of course, our largest foreign buyer of treasury bonds. They've been slowing down for some time in China because they've got enough of their own debt. They don't need to accumulate ours as well. And Japan's been stepping in. The question is, who's going to step in behind Japan as well in all of this? And I think this is where issues are. Not only are we looking at a Federal Reserve that now is reacting to current growth, not what could happen. They can only react to the current situation in the U.S., which is a stronger economy. They got to raise interest rates, and they're actually talking about raising them to a higher endpoint and overshooting a bit because they might need to tighten policy. That reality is set into Wall Street in a way that it hasn't before. At the same time, the Fed is no longer providing the ceiling that it did with its bloated balance sheet on long-term interest rates, and you're also issuing a lot of debt. We just closed the fiscal year, and we actually exceeded what people thought were outrageous estimates by the Congressional Budget Office in terms of deficits and the amount of debt that we had to issue.
There is, on Wall Street today, some are talking about possible correction.
You know, if I knew and could time these things, as I've often said, I'd own my own island that doesn't get hurricanes, so I don't.
We'll join you.
Yes, I know. But the reality is that, you know, Wall Street has been helped by an extraordinary long period of low interest rates, and they've planned on that, and that paradigm may be shifting now. And it doesn't take much of an interest rate shift to change the discount rate that these stocks are being priced at. So I think that's where you're seeing the jitters flow through on Wall Street. You also got a nice big boost to profits this year from a one-time tax cut. That's not going to happen again. In fact, the comparables are going to be much harder next year. You need an awful lot of growth to justify continued gains, as we've seen.
Diane Swank, the chief economist at Grant Thornton in Chicago, thanks as always for your perspective. Coming up, Papa John's could be the target of a takeover bid.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday toward planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
There is a report that a hedge fund that owns a stake in Wendy's is considering a takeover bid for Papa John's. Let's get the latest from Dave Wilson, reporter at Bloomberg in New York. Dave, thanks for joining us today. What do we know, and how would this affect that sector?
Well, we know that the Wall Street Journal's reported that Trian Fund Management, which is run by billionaire Nelson Peltz, is possibly looking at an offer for Papa John's. You mentioned their involvement in Wendy's. Certainly, Peltz has a reputation as an activist investor. He's been involved with many other companies, some in related businesses, Mondelez International, which is Oreo cookies, Nabisco, Cadbury chocolates, also Procter & Gamble, which is his biggest holding. So, you know, we'll see whether anything unfolds out of this. For the moment, though, I mean, you've got a stock that's headed for its biggest gain since July.
Well, is there anything still lingering over the political problems that the company had last year?
Well, it's an identity issue now. Papa John's, you could say, is an example of what you might call key man risk in business speak. I mean, so closely identified with their founder, John Schnatter, that when he resigned as CEO last December and then as chairman this past July, and he really became sort of front and center an issue for this company. Now, they've been trying to, in their television advertising, highlight offers of local stores, but you still got a company named Papa John's. And who's John? He's this guy who's had these issues, as you mentioned, with some of his statements over time. And people remember that. So the challenge for this company is, you know, how do you get beyond that?
You know, we've seen a growth, it seems, in the past, say, 10 years of these combo restaurants where you'll have a Baskin-Robbins next to Taco Bell or something along those lines. How has that model worked? And would that model work in Papa John's case as they bring in, say, Wendy's and other, you know, restaurant chains, fast food providers?
Yeah, it's working okay if you think about, let's say, a Dunkin' Donuts, which, of course, is dropping donuts from its name because they're, you know, so focused on coffee. I mean, they have lots of stores with Baskin-Robbins ice cream attached to it. So, you know, there's an example where it has worked. And just because Wendy's may get involved with Papa John's, it doesn't necessarily mean that Wendy's is going to be the actual buyer here or that, indeed, you get sort of these combo locations. But it is, you know, at least something to think about in terms of, you know, how best does all of this come together here.
Is it a good cross-platform, though, to have these different, say, fast food portfolios in your group of companies?
Well, I mean, if you look back over the history of Wendy's, you know, under Peltz, I mean, they owned Tim Hortons, the donut chain, for some time. They since split that up. Nonetheless, you know, at least you can point to that as an example. And there are others like it. You think about Restaurant Brands, which has the backing of Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway, and that's Burger King and some other chains there. So, you know, we certainly have enough examples to suggest that there is some value in combined ownership, you might say.
Dave, thanks for joining us today. Thanks for the information. Dave Wilson, reporter at Bloomberg News in New York. And still ahead on Travel Tuesday, ways to make your credit card work for you and help pay for your next trip.
WBBM News Time, 12:25. Let's get a live look at the markets as we go to Bloomberg. This report sponsored by Baird. Here's Lisa Peretti.
Jim and Chris, interesting footnote to your conversation about Papa John's. The stock is higher by almost 9% today on that takeover talk. The Dow is down 13 points, NASDAQ up 14, S&P lower by a fraction. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg lower by 0.4%. We'll have to see how this thing shakes out. We've been on both sides of the flat line today. Now let's check in with Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
After being higher early, corn near its low, down 2.5 in December at 3.64. Beans down near their low, down 9.25 November at 8.60 3/4. And wheat still up 1 after being up 7. Mixed prices, mostly lower on corn and beans, higher on wheat. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities and Normal.
Thanks, Pete. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Welcome to the WBBM Noon Business Hour, presented by the Village of Bedford Park. I'm Jim Gutis.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are mixed. We'll see what's moving the markets.
Travel Tuesday, ways to use your credit card points to pay for your vacation.
Google has announced its new phone, the Pixel 3, and we'll find out what features it has.
Governor Rauner and challenger J.B. Pritzker exchange barbs during a rare face-to-face meeting.
President Trump says U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley will be leaving his administration at the end of the year.
Wall Street right now, the Dow down about 20 points, the NASDAQ up 10, S&P 500 down by 1.
The WBBM AccuWeather forecast, we're going to see some storms around this afternoon with a high of 83, more rain tonight, especially in the western suburbs, with a low of 69. WBBM News Time, 12:31.
Hurricane Michael is bearing down on the Florida panhandle, and there will be disruptions to air travel. Let's get an update from Joe Sweeterman, professor of public services, director of the Chadwick Institute at DePaul University here in Chicago. Joe, what are they planning right now?
Well, we're starting to see the effects escalate here. You know, the hurricane's coming really due north, up toward right near Pensacola, and we've had three airports, Fort Walton Beach, Pensacola, and Destin. We're seeing a lot of preemptive cancellations, you know, which in the about 100 flights so far. But really, it's midnight tonight when the real cancellations start. We're going to have some complete airport closures, so this one could be big.
Obviously, you have to keep an eye on the schedules and that sort of thing, but what else, Joe, can we tell anyone who's either flying in that area or could be affected by the ripple effects of all of this?
Right. Well, right now we're hoping, just like the last, Hurricane Florence, that it's not going to hit a major airport. So right at the moment, Florida airports like Tampa on the Gulf, St. Petersburg, Orlando further inland, aren't warning passengers that there's going to be cancellations. That said, the hurricane appears to be picking up velocity, and it could be a category three by the time it hits the shore. And that thing could veer toward New Orleans. We could see large airports do massive cancellations. We're watching this hour by hour.
All right. Thanks for the update, Joe Sweeterman, professor of public services, director of the Chadwick Institute at DePaul University here in Chicago.
Mixed returns on Wall Street today, and we're joined by Hugh Johnson, the chairman and chief investment officer at Hugh Johnson Advisors in Albany. So it has been an up and down day on Wall Street. Why, Hugh?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. I think, first of all, interest rates have gone up quite a bit in the last week and a half.
And I think everybody's asking the question, is the rise in interest rates really too much for the kind of earnings that we expect coming forward? That's part of the equation. Part of the equation saying that, well, maybe we ought to take some money off the table because interest rates have risen. At the same time, everybody knows we're starting to enter the earnings season and that there are likely to be a lot of surprises, pleasant surprises, earnings that come in stronger than expected. And that might be a catalyst for the stock market to move higher. So I think it's a level of uncertainty. The good news is that earnings are coming out. They're likely to be better than expected. The bad news is that we're operating with a little bit higher level of interest rates. And there's kind of a trade-off there, and the investors are a little bit stuck right now.
I saw it suggested by someone on Wall Street today that interest rates could lead to a correction on Wall Street. What do you think?
I think that the important question really, Chris, implicit in what your question is this, and that is interest rates certainly could lead to a correction. It could be the catalyst for a correction in stock prices. The real question, which a lot of people are asking me, is this going to be just a correction in an ongoing cycle, which includes a bull market and an economic expansion, or is it the start of the end of the cycle, a bear market that will be accompanied by a recession? And my answer to that question is, this is a correction in a bull market. It's not the end of a bull market and the start of a bear market. So if we do get a correction or further correction because of the rise in interest rates, I would look at that as being welcome news. We'd get down to a level where stocks have a little bit of more upside potential. So I don't see this as the end of the bull market, even though this has been an extraordinarily long bull market.
It's been about 10 years.
It's been 10 years. It's not only been 10 years, but it's been the longest bull market since 1890. So when you look at it from that perspective, you'd be a little bit nervous about it. Yeah, you bet you should be nervous about it and very, very vigilant. But again, when I look at the so-called tea leaves, I think that the things like the yield curve and the leading indicators for the economy, the performance of the markets, when I look at the tea leaves, they tell me, yeah, look, it's been long. But at the same time, all the tea leaves are telling me we've got further to go in this current cycle. So there's hopefully from a little bit lower level with a correction, there's still some upside and some time left in this bull market.
And are there places that would be a good place to invest right now?
Well, it's a very mixed bag. But, I mean, we've even seen utilities do fairly well. They only do well in a bear market. But I wouldn't get suckered by that. Quite frankly, I'd see if we do get a little bit further correction, I'd be looking still at the kinds of things that have been working in this market. And technology has been hit pretty hard. I think it'll get to levels that are really represent pretty good value. So that's one sector of the market. The other sector of the market is consumer discretionary stocks. I would look very, very hard at those. And so those are kind of the two big sectors of the market that I would look at. And if we get enough of a pullback in energy, I might look at energy as well.
Hugh, anything out there that you've got a red light on, don't look at it? Anything that really concerns you?
Yeah, you know, the red lights really come, first of all, in the fixed income markets, you don't want to buy any long bonds. The second place that you see it is all the kind of stuff that's been caught up in speculation, and not the least of which is, of course, all the kind of Bitcoin stuff. The cryptocurrency world is something you should really stay away from because that was caught up in a real mania, and now that mania is being flushed out. And then, of course, in the stock market itself, be very careful when it comes to the so-called defensive sectors. Consumer staples is a defensive sector, which I'd be very careful of. Anything in the kind of telecommunications area, there's only a few stocks there that I'd be a little bit careful of. Now, I still look at this as a bull market and to stay with it, but stay away from the things that have been caught up in speculation.
Hugh Johnson, the Chairman and Chief Investment Officer at Hugh Johnson Advisors in Albany, New York. Thanks, Hugh. Ahead on Travel Tuesday, paying for your next trip using credit card points.
The best daily deal in Chicago, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Travel Tuesday, sponsored by Kaler Luggage, and today we're exploring how to best use credit cards as a travel tool. Ted Rossman, the industry analyst at creditcards.com in New York, and I guess if you use your credit cards right and take advantages of the rewards that are offered, you can really do well when it comes to helping to cut your vacation costs.
You absolutely can. Yeah, thanks for having me. This is really the golden age of rewards travel. There are so many great credit card sign-up bonuses right now. You can get 50,000 points worth about $750 in travel from the Chase Sapphire Reserve, and the Sapphire Preferred is not too far behind that. There's a new Amex Gold card. There's lots going on that's really great for consumers who can pay their bills in full.
What's the best way to balance the rewards that you get with perhaps the fees, interest rates, that sort of thing that also come with some of these cards? How do you make sure that you're getting a good deal for the rewards that you're earning?
It's really important to pay your bill in full every month. If you ever carry a balance, that's going to completely wipe out any rewards you might get. The average credit card interest rate is 17%. So if you're getting 1%, 2%, even 5% back in a given category, it pales in comparison. So job number one, pay your bills in full. If you can do that, there's tons of great options out there that can get you free airline tickets, free hotels, cash back. You just got to pay those bills in full.
What's the best way to manage those rewards, manage your points?
I think it's really important to have a goal in mind. So think about not only how do you spend your money, but then what do you want to get out of it? Is it a specific trip to a specific destination? Is it cash back? There are a lot of great transferable points programs, things like Chase and American Express, so you can transfer to a whole bunch of different partners. You want to keep that in mind. It tends to diversify your portfolio, just like we would talk about with investments.
What percentage do you think of customers are actually using these rewards?
So we find that people love cash back more than anything. We found that of all the people who have rewards credit cards, and that's about half of Americans, about half of those like cash back, and then otherwise it gets really fragmented. We find that there's a dedicated crew that loves to travel and loves to get free first-class airline tickets and hotels, but those are more like high single digits apiece.
And what is some of the cost that's involved? For example, how do you make sure that you're not spending too much to get those rewards? You talked about paying off, but is there anything else that you need to watch out for to make sure that you're not necessarily spending more for these points than they're worth?
Our creditcards.com survey found that only 1 in 4 credit cards charges an annual fee. Not all annual fees are bad. Some of these premium cards like the Amex Platinum, the Citi Prestige, the Chase Sapphire Reserve, some of them charge hefty annual fees like $450 or even $550 a year, but they offer great perks that can help offset that. So I wouldn't necessarily be scared of fees, but think carefully about how you travel and what you want to get out of these cards to make sure it's the best fit for you.
Thanks for the information. Ted Rossman is industry analyst at creditcards.com in New York. Join us at this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday. Still to come, a brand new smartphone is set to hit the market.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Google has unveiled its new Pixel 3 phone at a press event in New York City today. Let's get some details with Shelley Palmer, CEO of the Palmer Group in New York. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Shelley. Tell us about this new phone.
So it's exactly as leaked, and I do mean exactly as leaked. Google announced the Pixel 3, and it's the Pixel 3 XL. The 3 is a 5.5-inch device, and the 3 XL is a 6.3-inch device, just slightly smaller than the iPhone XS Max, and the 5.5-inch is roughly the size of the iPhone. They don't have dual rear-facing cameras. It's a single rear camera, but they have a dual front-facing camera to take wide-angle selfies. I thought that was interesting. They're boasting all kinds of camera features, high-res zoom, night sight, some photo booth modes. They were kind of excited about what they could do. They didn't talk too much about Pi, Android Pi, the new operating system. They probably will in the future. And there's an idea someone leaked that they're going to have a wireless charging stand for it for $80 pretty soon. The 3 is $799 to start. The XL is $899. They have 64 gigabytes of storage. And oddly enough, Google made these available for pre-order before the event was over. So you go online and get them now. Other things they said were Duplex, which is their AI voice calling system. Going to debut soon. They're going to test it, and I guess in November it's going to start rolling out on a city by city basis. Assistant can like make reservations at restaurants or appointments at hair salons. It was kind of controversial when they demoed it last summer, but they think it's working better now.
You think this could
they put out?
You think this could hurt Apple?
No. Did I wait too long to answer? Look, if you want an iPhone, nothing else will do. If you're looking for stock Android in a great configuration, then Google Pixel is for you. And if you're looking for an astoundingly well-made handset with some value add from the manufacturer, then Samsung Android is what you want to look at. And they're three different customers. I found, you know, there are people who are devotees, they're religious zealots for all three, people who must the Google purists who must have a Pixel, and the Samsung people who are in love with the Note, and the Note 9 is quite spectacular. And then you've got, you know, all your friends, nothing but an iPhone will do. That's what it is. They can't be talked out of it. So this isn't about moving people from place to place. Super quickly, they also announced Chrome OS on a tablet called the Pixel Slate. And that's a very low price, $599 Chromebook. And it becomes a Chromebook, I guess, after you add the $99 keyboard. It's kind of an interesting approach to a tablet, laptop, keyboards thing. It's the Google Slate tablet, but they're putting Chrome OS on it, which is great. So you now have a Chrome tablet, if you will.
The Shelley Palmer, CEO of the Palmer Group in New York. You can follow Shelley at Twitter at Shelley Palmer and at ShelleyPalmer.com. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the all-new Radio.com app.
WBBM News Time, 12:55. This business report sponsored by Kaler Luggage. And here's Elisa Peretti.
Chris, the Dow now lower by 31 points, NASDAQ up 2, S&P down 2, the Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index is lower by 0.5%. Some choppy trade today as tech investors jump back into some big names after recent losses, looking for some good deals there, while the market also takes in a reduced global economic forecast from the IMF. For the first time in 6 years, stock in Ford has fallen below $9 a share. The stock has tumbled 28% since the first of the year. The losses come as the carmaker outlines ways it intends to save money through job cuts and cutting some advertising. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.